You're listening to TalkZone.com, Internet Talk Radio. Now, the Wild About Pets radio show, the place to learn something new about household pets and wild animals. Here's your host, educator and naturalist, Susan Frank.
Hello, and welcome to Wild About Pets. This is the place we talk about everything concerning pets and wild animals. Today, we're going to be talking about horses. In order to make your listening experience more enjoyable, I have a companion website that allows you to see photographs of the animals we're talking about on this show. So if you want to look at pictures while you're listening, you will find these on my website, wildaboutpets.net. It's easy to get to this page of photos. Click the purple Look While You Listen button you see on my page here at TalkZone, or if you are already on my website homepage, just click the Look While You Listen menu button. Has this ever happened to you? You are just starting to learn how to do something. Let's say take care of an animal you know very little about, and you seek out and are given advice by other people, many times experts. But when you questioned the methods, were you told, that's just the way it's done, even when it didn't always make sense to you? My guest today, Joe Camp, is the author of the best-selling The Soul of a Horse, Life Lessons from the Herd. And when he and his wife Kathleen found themselves 3 horses deep into ownership for the first time and needing to learn everything about horses, they didn't stop with, it's just the way it's always been done. Their journey of educating themselves led them right into the very essence, or soul, if you will, of horses, how the wild ones live, how to meet their needs, and what it takes to build a relationship based on trust with a horse. What they discovered and now practice is very different from how it has always been done. For anyone who loves horses, you will hear much useful information about my guest today. Welcome, Joe. I am thrilled you are here today.
It is my pleasure. I'm just really happy to be here, Susan.
Joe Camp is the man behind the canine superstar Benji. He wrote, directed, and produced all 5 of the celebrated Benji movies and all of the Benji television programs. I have a few photos of Benji on the website that you can also see. Joe is also an author, passionate speaker, animal lover, and advocate for increasing awareness of animal issues, including adoption and the proper care of horses. His new best-selling book is The Soul of a Horse, Life Lessons from the Herd. And as we talk with Joe, you can see pictures of Joe's horses that I have on my website. So if you want to see these photos, click that purple Look While You Listen button on my Talk Zone show page. By the way, our phone lines are also open. It's February 20th. We are taking live calls on the air, so you can ask Joe questions, and that number is 888-463-6748, or 888-GO-FOR-IT. Joe, let's get started.
Okay.
You tell the story that one day you went on a trail ride, which was your very first ride, and 2 weeks later, you owned 3 horses. How did this come about?
I often wonder. It is, when we moved out to the country, a couple of years before that happened, actually, the house that we bought actually had a couple of horse stalls on it, and they were sort of off to the west from our front porch, and we'd sit out there in the evening and watch the sunset and say, well, wouldn't it be wonderful if we had a couple of horses wandering around in those stalls down there, kind of a picture postcard, you know, at sunset. And we just talked about it often, and one day I woke up, my birthday, and Kathleen said, get in the car. I said, well, what's going on? She said, get in the car. I said, all right, what's up for my birthday? She drives down to this park in the town down below where our house is, and there's a trailer with 3 horses and all saddled up, ready to go, and off we went on this 6-hour trail ride. And I, you know, fell in love with this horse that I was riding, and he was just a really terrific guy, an Arabian. And what I didn't know through all of this is that Kathleen was petrified for the whole 6 hours.
Mm.
She had no idea. People have called this book The Ultimate Love Story because she this was a time in my life when I really needed something to become passionate about, and she saw that, and she suppressed the fact that she has been deathly afraid of horses for ever since she was a kid. She got knocked off of one. And so it was months before I realized that and had no idea that all that was going on. But sure enough, after that trail ride, the lady who had the horses that we were riding just happened to mention that she had one for sale, and she was good friends with some folks in our church who happened to have two for sale, and just wink, all of a sudden, here we are with three horses, and I can promise you one thing, two cute little stalls and a six-hour trail ride are not a good reason to go out and buy three horses.
Well, Joe, one of the reasons why your book is so engaging is you do just lay your whole story out. And I think a lot of people can relate. You know, you talk about the fear and you talk about coming from nowhere and your whole story of knowing nothing and the whole process. And that's fabulous that you're so honest and you put that humanity right in front in print so everyone can hear, you know, what your story was like.
Well, that's true, because that's exactly where we were. We were two complete neophytes, you know, and had never had a horse or a clue at the time that, you know, this all happened. And we were really very fortunate, because when we were making kind of our obligatory boot barn trip that, you know, new horse owners have to make before the horses come, Kathleen picked up a local horse trader or something that had an article about Monty Roberts. And Monty Roberts is the guy that the original Horse Whisperer was patterned after, his book, The Man Who Listens to Horses. And he communicates with horses. He spent a lot of time in the wild watching Mustangs and how they react to each other and how they, you know, communicate with each other. And so I went straight home and ordered his books and DVDs. And when our first three came, first thing I did was take Cash, my boy that's on the cover of the book, down to that round pen to do what Marty calls a join-up, with a commitment that, you know, this was a way that we were going to begin with all our horses, because it gives the horse the choice as to whether or not he wants to be in relationship with you. And that, you know, takes all the I want it my way out of it. And so I went through this process to do this, which is, you know, kind of a leveling of the playing field and using the language that he has known forever. And at some point I'm supposed to turn around and lower my shoulders and act very submissive and give him the choice as to whether or not to come up and join up with me. When he came up and touched me on the shoulder, I just broke down crying. And that's what changed everything. The fact that I was no longer, in an instant, no longer a horse owner, but I was, you know, a friend, a partner, a, call it what you will, a companion. And this horse had trust you, and I trust you to be my leader, and I had no choice but to say back to him, and I will do the very best job of that that I could. And that's what started all the questions and the digging and so forth to try to find out really what, you know, how these guys are supposed to live.
We have a photograph of Cash. That's number 5. Joe, that was the horse that you said you fell in love with on the trail ride?
No, it was the one that she had that I was riding is one of her horses. She wouldn't turn it loose, but he looks very much like Cash, and he's very much has that personality. It's a very, very unique Cash. Kathleen's often said that he is such a gentleman that if he spoke English, he would do it with an English accent. he is just very, very polite and gentlemanly, and, you know, never in your face. It's just a wonderful, wonderful boy. And she happened to have this horse for sale at the same time that we were doing the trail ride. And so, you know, we were over there probably later that afternoon or the next day, I don't recall exactly, taking a look at him, and I fell in love with him right off the bat. And so he was the first one actually that came in within 2 days, I think we had all three of them here. But anyway, when I he came with two shoes on his with shoes on his front feet, but not on his back feet, and that was the beginning of the questions for me, because everybody was saying, "Oh, you got to have shoes on, because if you don't have shoes on, the feet are going to fall apart and crack and break, and you know they'll have all these problems."
Yes.
I said, how come he doesn't have shoes on his back feet? And I couldn't get a good answer on that.
Uh-huh.
So I started digging around and found out that I was asking the wrong question. I should have been asking, why does he have shoes on his front feet?
In the first place, and we're going to talk about that and some of the differences that, you know, I kind of refer to of, you know, the traditional methods that have, you know, been around as long as horsemanship has. But before we do that, I want to go back a little bit, because you mentioned that two of you knew very little about horses, and your book travels back and forth between your personal story and letting everyone know much more about the natural history of horses. What are some of the key things, Joe, that you would want everyone to know about the horse, the wild horse?
Well, the key thing, and this is the thing that a lot of people find really difficult to grasp, but I've done, since that day, an enormous amount of research. Kathleen said the book should have been called Google It, because I was out, you know, all the time going through, and I joined a couple of, you know, the American Association for the Advancement of Science and things like this, so I could get into their files and whatnot. And the beginning key thing is that every horse on the planet is genetically the same. Wild horse, quote, domestic horse, whatever you want to call it, they are all genetically the same, which means that they all carry those genes that have been evolved and developed by Mother Nature and God for almost 55 million years. I mean, they've been around that long, evolving and making themselves right. And they are a prey animal. You know, the horse is a prey animal. Most people know that, a flight animal.
Mm-hmm.
But what most people don't stop to realize is that the horse, there are a lot of prey animals. I mean, even a cow is a prey animal, but a cow has horns that if he were in the wild, a wolf was after him, he could turn around and at least put up a fight. The horse has no defense other than to run. And so he has been equipped to be able to see predators coming from a very long distance, to be able to run the length that it takes to put a wolf or a cougar, you know, down on the ground, basically, because they're very fast in the short run, the wolves and the cougars, but they don't go the distance. And so the horse will run a quarter to three-eighths of a mile out in the wild and then stop and turn around to see what's going on. You know, are they still following him, or are they so tired that nothing's going to happen now? And that's part of the concept with Monty when we, the join-up thing is, you know, running that distance. But the whole concept in here is the horse that some people have in a dark stall in a barn, eating, you know, from table height and with lots of sugar and wearing metal shoes and all of that, is exactly the same horse that needs to be, like the wild horse, out on wide expanses of property so that they can, they're most comfortable when they can see things coming. They don't understand that when you put them in a stall that it's safe.
Sure.
You know, they think that that's the least safe place they can be, because A, they can't see the distance horizons, they can't see what's going on. B, you've taken them away from the herd. They are herd animals, not because they like to be around their buddies, but because they, safety and security is their number one thing, and they are safe and secure within the group, within the herd, whether it's, you know, a herd of three or a herd of 300.
Which, of course, leads, Joe, to kind of the ideas about, well, when the horses are solitary in their stalls, what is that doing to them they are used to being with other horses?
It's giving them huge, huge, huge amounts of stress. You know, to carry that on just a step further, the horse, you know, in the wild will move anywhere from 10 to 30 miles a day, you know, over all kinds of terrain, foraging for, you know, niblets to eat, and for water and staying away from these predators. And they eat 16 to 18 hours a day, little bits at a time, and that's the way their system is developed. They have tiny little tummies and a big long back gut that is supposed to have this forage flowing through it, small quantities, all day long. And they're supposed to be moving all day long. And, you know, that is so, and you know, the other thing, which we'll come back to, you mentioned later, is, you know, their feet are flexing with every time, you know, every impact on the ground. Those feet are flexing, and that's a very important thing to them, because they're doing it, like I said, for 16, 18 hours a day, wandering around and looking for food and so forth. And that's helping their circulation, their blood flow, and giving them kind of a hydraulic shock absorption, because it's sucking an enormous amount of blood down into the foot capsule every time that they make impact with the ground. And so all of this, when you put a horse in a small space away from the herd with metal shoes on, where the foot can't flex and the circulation is down, and where he can't move, you know, at least that 8 to 10 miles a day on his own, and he can't eat little bits at a time all day long because he's being fed two big fat meals, you know, at breakfast and dinner, usually at table height, which is, you know, very wrong for a horse designed to eat from the ground, and a lot of things go wrong when they don't. And so all of that, you know, you keep reading in these magazines, you know, about what to do about stall vices. So the one thing you do with a stall vice is get them the heck out of the stall, because, you know, the stall vice is created by the stress. I saw an ad actually in a magazine. I think I mentioned it in the book, but I clipped it out and I have it hanging on the wall here that says has a picture of a horse sticking his head out of a really dark, ugly stall, and said this horse is stressed and at risk because it's confined. And I said, oh, that's an interesting headline. I went down to it, and what they were doing is selling ulcer medication.
Oh, right, sure, right, Medicaid.
Not addressing the problem.
No, Joe, what is a stall vice, if I'm hearing you correctly?
Well, you know, if you go to any stable where horses are kept in this kind of an environment, and you will see at one time or another the horse is weaving and pacing and gnawing on wood and cribbing, what they call cribbing, where they grab a bar or a piece of wood and suck in anything, for diversion and to take their mind off the fact that they are not able to do what they are genetically designed to do, which is move, eat little bits at a time, be with the herd, be able to see what's coming at them. And so those are all developed. A lot of people like to put that on the horse. Well, this horse is not, his personality is bad, and so he's going to have more stall vices. No, it's just the stress that they are undergoing at some level by being cooped up and kept in a manner completely opposite the way that their genetics have been designed for them to live.
That makes sense, doesn't it? It's almost common sense. Going a little further about what you were saying about what we kind of think is just normal for a horse, I was struck by you're really talking about, you know, the nature of prey animals and that they are meant to react and flee. And I think it's so common, as you well know, amongst riders, because I've ridden horses or people talk about horses, that if something like spooks a horse, we kind of label them as being overly skittish. As you said, like there's something wrong with the horse, when I think what you're saying is this is their nature and there's nothing wrong with the horse. They are meant to be reactive and they are going to spook easily. Isn't that correct?
It is absolutely correct. In fact, it's hardwired, and I have seen example after example of this. You know, like you say, a lot of people think not only are they skittish, but they're mean. And you know, this little story in the book about Kathleen getting knocked down by one of ours because she was standing in the wrong place at the wrong time and was not aware enough to not be in that wrong place, and some dogs came down from next door barking and yapping, and the horse, I mean, literally like a rabbit, you know, leaped up and sideways, about 10 feet, it looked like to me, because I was at the other end of the arena when it happened. And Kathleen got up with a sore rear end, but did not scold the horse, did not do anything other than say, it's okay, keep the adrenaline
sure.
down. All right, you're okay, and it's all my fault because I was not in the right place at the right time.
Yeah,
but it is so hardwired into them, because those extra seconds that they get in the wild to, you know, when they feel anything happening, hear it, or, you know, the flutter of a butterfly way off in their periphery vision, send them. And then they come down and start processing after they're in motion, so that, in effect, those extra seconds are probably the reason that we even know the horse, because if they were not able to, you know, to move quickly and to react quickly and stay away from these predators, they would have been extinct long ago.
Well, we're going to talk about some of how we actually translate what we know now about wild horses into what horse owners can do right after we take a short break. So stay tuned, everyone. We'll be right back with more after this.